You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Together listeners, I am really excited to bring back Leon onto the podcast, our marketing lead. We're talking all about back to school because Leon just graduated with his MBA.
I'm excited to be back, and yeah, I'm still a little traumatized now. It was a lot of fun.
That's
It'll
so
be
funny.
A good conversation.
Yeah, so we figured that we could talk about things from a few different angles. So listeners, you may or may not know, I had a baby about a year ago almost. She's about 9 months. And so as a parent, I haven't experienced too much back to school yet because she's still pretty little. But we figured we could talk about things from a, you know, kids and family perspective. While my kid's not in school, I have friends and family that are going through that right now. And then, you know, so then as does Leon. And the other thing we wanted to talk about was, you know, back to school from, you know, an older perspective, like college, grad students, et cetera, because obviously, like, there's quite a few of you listening right now. So there's all sorts of really interesting tips and tricks that we have come up with to kind of help think about going back to school from a sustainable perspective, meaning like not a bunch of accumulation of brand new things. But I kind of feel like just like throwing it back. Like, I remember when I'd go back to school as a kid, that was like a thing. Like, you would like pick whatever your favorite, like, I don't know, like cartoon or something was that year. And then it was like, you wanted everything to be branded with that, right?
Yeah. Like my lunchbox, I remember being Jurassic Park branded. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Not to age myself a little bit. No. Everyone was obsessed when it came out that year. And so I like wanted everything Jurassic Park.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with like birthday parties, you know, like everything had to be like themed, whatever it was. Yeah,
exactly.
I remember I was just totally obsessed with Lisa Frank at one point and just kind of anything. I loved animals, obviously still do. And that was always my thing. I always wanted everything, like whatever. If there was a Disney movie out, I wanted the animal sidekick all over everything because there's always an animal sidekick, Lion King, et cetera. So, you know, I think as we think about, you know, the general theme for almost every podcast that we record, it's like, number one, we're realists. And so we understand that you're going to have to buy new things. Like that's totally just part of what happens, but you don't necessarily have to buy every single thing new. And the new stuff that you buy can actually be more eco-friendly than just like running to the store and grabbing the first thing that you see. Right.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I know on my end during the MBA, I made sure to get, you know, I was getting all my books and everything like secondhand. I mean, it's just no need to go buy all that stuff new. And it's so expensive anyways. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. So
Yeah, just absolutely.
Little things like that even make a big difference.
Absolutely. So, I mean, when we're thinking about stuff, so first of all, I think just taking an inventory and planning ahead before you head out to the store. So, like, you know, laying everything out from last year, looking to see what you need to refresh. I mean, obviously, we know that, you know, especially when your kids or you're going through, you know, younger folks, a lot of times teachers will send out required lists, you know, like things that you have to buy. So you can take that list that they, you know, are saying, look, this is the required stuff for the year. Take that list and make your own list of things that you need. Look at what you already have so that you're not duplicating things. Because I feel like that's like a super common thing for almost any item in your house if you don't know that you have it, right? A lot of us have an abundance of things. So if you're not super organized, which most of us aren't, like there's not enough time in the day, like, you know, just like, okay, like taking an afternoon or, you know, morning or something and like just laying everything out, right? Because I think having a list and operating from that perspective can definitely help you, number one, not buy duplicates, but number two, not like go crazy with like a bunch of stuff you don't need, right?
Yeah, I'm still trying to find those organization hours in my day. So, you know, it's a work in progress.
Well, it's totally a work in progress. And you know what, Leon, like if you do it in a way that's like, you don't have to organize your entire closet or whatever, you can literally just say, look, today I'm focusing on like back to school. So I'm going to just pull that kind of stuff out and school supplies one thing at a time. But we had a few tips about like, okay, so thinking about, you know, as you're planning ahead, like, you know, there's a lot of big name retailers that are, you know, we're recording this in August. It's coming out in August. Like we are in full back to school swing already, right? Like the retailers are really, really thinking about back to school deals. And so like, you know, how do we challenge ourselves to go in there and not go crazy if everything's on sale?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The sales are always very tempting and there's a lot going on right now. So, you know, definitely takes a little discipline there.
Yeah. And like, what do you feel like is a good way to like ground yourself? Like maybe, I mean, we found some statistics about household waste, right? Like you want to share some of those?
It's crazy. So yeah, according to the EPA, the average person produces 4.9 pounds of waste per day. And it's like hard for me to wrap my brain around that.
Yeah. Basically 5 pounds, 5 pounds of waste a day. How much does a sack of flour weigh? Remember when they used to, speaking of school, and they made you carry that around like a baby?
Math was not my strong suit.
Yeah, I know. Okay, wait, I'm going to look that up because for me, how much does that weigh? Sack of flour. No, I don't need to know about like a giant sack of flour. Google. Guys, bear with me. Hold on.
You're going to get all these targeted flour.
I know. I just want like what's okay. So the normal 2 pounds. Okay. So like imagine two pound bags of flour and then that's still not enough. Like that's how much waste you're producing per day. I was trying to get like a visualization for everybody. So that's a lot. And so that's per person in your house. The reason why I was looking at the flour weight is because I really wanted a good visualization for us to think about as we think about waste. So back to school is one way we can visualize it, but there's also many other things that we do during our daily life that are wasteful. So if we're thinking about like multiple, you know, sacks of flour per day per person, that's a lot. So like just, I don't know, starting things off by just being really mindful about our waste is always a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can also really put an emphasis on kind of reusing items and not having to buy, you know, new stuff all the time. I mean, for example, we're actually, you know, have a awesome like washable paper lunch bag. That's really cool. I was actually going to buy it myself. and so that's going to be, you know, something from the Brightly shop, but it's really awesome. And it's just things like that where you can keep reusing and you're not having to throw stuff away all the time. It just makes a big difference on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, you know, you're right. So little things like that. I mean, so kind of walking through our cycle, right? So we've done our inventory, we've identified, we do need a few new things. So you're right. Like if you're going out and buying new things, you can always try and find the more eco-friendlier option. You know, Leon just mentioned one cool item that we have in the Brightly shop. And in August, we're going to have a few more like back to school items listed, which is cool. We actually have another thing that I thought was really fun is we have a notebook that is made of stone paper, which is kind of insane. Like,
Laura, this blew my mind. Yeah. I still can't wrap my head around it. It's so cool.
Yeah. So it's like tree free, which, by the way, like, paper is required, like, so much paper is required for school. And, you know, number one, like, just checking the source of the paper, like, if it's FSC certified, that's usually a decent bet. It's not completely without its faults, but I think FSC certification is a good, easy one to look for when you're out looking for paper products. But just like the meat industry, and I mean, just like every industry, we feel like we know in our heads where stuff comes from. It's not necessarily true. Like, you might think to yourself, oh, well, you know, I need all this paper and it's grown on this farm and it's done in like a relatively responsible way. It's a tree, you know, like when you cut a tree down, you can put a new one up. And that's unfortunately like not always the case. Like, they, you would be surprised. There's still a lot of just like straight up logging that goes on in, you know, environments in the United States and Canada. Like, it's, that's a little bit crazy to me. Actually, in the Pacific Northwest, if you drive around like in more rural areas or you're trying to go out to like a national park, there's all sorts of places that have just been straight up logged and they're not farms, which I was always kind of, my mind was blown. So obviously we've got, you know, habitat destruction going on in the name of industry and you know, wood and things like that. So just making sure we're being mindful about that. So the fun thing about this, like, stone papers, it's literally made from stones. You can't tell, like, the paper itself, it's thick. It's a little, maybe a little bit thicker, but it's not like, I mean, you would not say, oh, this is made of stones. It just seems like total regular paper, and it's recyclable, which is really cool. So we have that as kind of like a product in the shop to like spark some curiosity. Obviously, we know you're not going to buy every single notebook made out of stone paper, but it's kind of fun, you know, and like using that as an opportunity to talk about what I just talked about with like logging and like just thinking about like where your paper comes from. I think is fun. And you know, especially when you're working with kids and the little ones, like, that's kind of a fun thing to talk about, right?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Like, teaching sustainability and just things like that and where things come from to spark curiosity at a young age, I think is really, really important.
Yeah. And so there are, you know, all sorts of really interesting things that we're putting in the shop, but you can always look for, you know, regardless if you're, you know, shopping in our swap shop or you're just like at Walmart or you're wherever you are shopping. Again, look for, you know, FSC certification on paper products. You can look for things made of recycled materials. Those are, you're seeing more and more of that come up where people have like anything that's created from plastic is made of some recycled plastic. So again, like, plastic is not great. We like to have you reduce your plastic consumption as much as possible. If you have to buy plastic, recycled is sometimes an option, which can be good. But I think the TLDR of all of this is that, you know, first of all, if you have to buy a new, try and be a little bit more thoughtful about it. You know, and when you're at bigger retailers, it actually sends a pretty nice signal to them. If you're choosing to purchase the eco-friendlier option, like, that's a signal to them that they need to, you know, supply more of those later on. And so I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind from a new perspective. And I mean, the last thing I'll say about materials, right? We talked about stone paper. You talked about like the washable paper lunch bag. Like, there's so many cool products out there that are made of eco-friendlier materials that I think, you know, you're going to find a really fun story there. And also just a really good opportunity to vote with your dollars as you're buying new school supplies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned this a little bit, Leon, when we were talking about this episode, like, you know, how buying things secondhand, especially like when you're in grad school, it's like totally, it's second nature, right? Like, especially textbooks. So like, yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I knew anyone in my MBA program who bought new, you know? So I think there's people are starting in certain areas to really kind of lean in to the whole, to sustainability and trying to be a little more eco-friendly there. But yeah, I mean, we would buy all our textbooks and everything secondhand, or we would, you know, do whatever we could to just kind of make sure we weren't kind of buying something new that would then like be thrown out. And so even when we were done, we would pass it on to kind of the next generation.
Yeah, that's what I was about to
MBA
say.
Students. Yeah. So the people that are just coming in. So that was kind of like a fun thing.
Yeah. I mean, I was about to say, I remember it being in school and having that swap mentality and just being like, look, we know that teachers are going to require us to have specific books, right? And they expect you to have them with you every day in class. And, you know, it's something that you can't really get away from. I would think that there's probably some teachers out there that are probably more open to having like people use digital versions of books and things like that. But there's always like, especially when you're trying to cram a lot of knowledge in your head, there's definitely some benefits, I think, to having something printed and sitting in front of you. So again, knowing that like the textbook industry in general is very wasteful. If you think about the number of new editions, I remember that used to drive me nuts where you'd like go out to the, you'd go out to the bookstore to grab your secondhand copy of your textbooks because you didn't want to spend, you know, thousands of dollars getting them new. And then, oh wait, the new edition has come out. And all of a sudden you can't use that, right? Like, did you experience that at all?
Yeah. Nothing's even really changed in the new edition. It's just a way for them to make more money, but it's so wasteful. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, and I mean, and it's a lot. I mean, if you, we actually found a few different statistics about textbooks themselves, but I mean, number one, it's kind of staggering. Like the average American student spends between $700 and $1,000 per year on textbooks, which is that's crazy. That's nuts. And you know, this is the cost often is bared by the school systems if you're in, you know, like your K through 12 situation. So many times the students themselves aren't buying the textbooks, but the you know, school administrations are, and they're sending money that way where they could basically be spending it on other things. So it's just, there's a lot of waste generated. And, you know, I don't know if everybody remembers like putting a bunch of textbooks in your bag and how bad that is for your back. Like, it's just like,
oh, that was brutal.
That was brutal, right? Don't you remember that?
When I was little, I was also short. And I remember, just having backpacks just filled to the brim of textbooks. And it was like, really, I mean, it really does take a toll on your back.
You know, oh, like, absolutely. And you know, especially like when you're little and you're like still growing, it's not good for your development. Like it's really not. Like it can really cause like, you know, not good things from your health perspective. And so we actually found an interesting statistic that was saying that the average high school student taking an average 4 classes per semester can culminate up to 20 pounds of textbook weight in their backpack. Like that's crazy. So anyway, I think that there is definitely a movement towards number one, like trying to just reduce the number of textbooks required in general. But yes, going back to this conversation around secondhand and letting people, you know, students actually purchase things secondhand. And that's not that textbooks aren't the only thing out there that, you know, obviously some textbooks can be recycled, some of them can't. Like thinking about making sure when you're checking through that list, you can get secondhand things. Like, who remembers the calculators, right? Like the TI back in our day, they were like souped up and people would like put games on them and stuff. But like,
that was wild.
Right. Yeah. That was pretty crazy. But I just remember again, how expensive those dang things were, right? Like they were so expensive at the time. I mean, I think they're still not cheap, but like, Leon and I are, you know, talking about 90s where, you know,
we're 90s
kids. So they weren't quite as proliferate as they are now. But yeah, I mean, they're really expensive. And guess what? Like electronics in general are very difficult to recycle. So most of the time people just throw them away. And so they end up in landfills, creating a ton of e-waste. So whether you're thinking about a calculator or a laptop, like, you don't need a like super crazy good souped up laptop to go to school on, like unless maybe you're taking like a course that requires that, like graphic design. But again, like you don't need a bunch of new stuff every year. Like, please don't do it and get some secondhand stuff if you can.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Swap with your student groups. Like, I would love to see a movement on campuses of people starting these like swaps and just like having, you know, like opening up and having events. I think that would be really cool to see because I feel like that's a big deal, because look, like people are already doing this from thrifting, right? Like, so let's talk a little about like clothes shopping, because I also remember that was a thing, right? Like you wanted to get like some new some new outfits for school, right?
I won't even go into those. Probably too many embarrassing stories back from that. But yeah, you want to be like wearing what's, you know, what's cool, what all the cool kids are wearing and what's trendy. And when you're, you know, that age, that's important. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of waste going on there for sure.
Yeah. So just thinking about, sure, you don't have to not buy anything new. You could get a few new outfits. That's fine. But just like number one, like try not to shop from fast fashion brands. You know, like seeing if you can purchase from places that make things a little bit more ethically. Of course, you can also go through secondhand. And I know thrifting is very, thankfully, starting to become like more and more mainstream. But, you know, you can not only do you need to, you know, could you go to a thrift store, but there's all sorts of places you can go online to look for things. And so, you know, in terms of like brands that we like that are, you know, sustainable fashion brands. Now, we first of all, we understand sustainable fashion oftentimes is not very wallet friendly. So like looking for sales and things like that, we totally get it. I really like, there's a few brands that are kind of staples in my closet and they have a variety. Some of these brands also make kids clothing and they're, they have men and women's clothing. So they're, a lot of them are very, you know, applicable to most people in your family, but like, I love Everlane. Tentree is a good one. Amorvair, Able, Nisolo. These are all some of my favorites. And Leanne, like, I know you're relatively new to the world of sustainable fashion yourself, but I'm curious to know if you had any favorite brands.
One of my favorite brands actually is a company called Mizzen and Main.
Oh, yeah.
And they are, I know the founder, it's a really cool company. So they basically make dress shirts and also now polos for school and work, but they, you don't need to take them to a dry cleaner, so they're super easy. They don't sweat, they are easily washable and minimally washable, and you never have to take it to a dry cleaner, so you save a lot of costs on that, and also it's, you know, kind of helpful on the environment in that way. So yeah, that's a brand for shirts that I really enjoy.
Yeah, and I mean that's a great call out because you definitely, you know, don't need to dry clean more than you really need to, and whether it's just a, you know, environmentally most dry cleaning is not great, but there are some sort of more responsible ones. But I love that. I love that idea. So just kind of going through the list and you know, the kind of the last few things that we wanted to share is like, again, in addition to thinking about waste, trying to avoid single use stuff. So like, as you get back into the swing of things with school, like, and you know, let's say you're a mom packing school lunches, like that's a thing. Like my mom did that. Like I know my husband's mom, oh my God, my husband and I are high school sweethearts. So we like literally knew each other back in the day. And I remember when he would come to school with like these like artisanal lunches. Like his mom would like make him these like amazing sandwiches that were like on like fresh bagels that she would go out and get the same day. Like, not happening over in my household now.
That's, I mean, amazing though.
Like, yeah. I mean, so, and then sometimes she would make me a lunch, which was kind of amazing. But yeah, so anyway, I remember like he used to bring his lunch, in one of those, a brown paper sack, which, you know, like would have been nice to probably have a reusable lunch bag instead of that. But I mean, at least that thing could have been recycled semi easily. But there was a ton, and I mean a ton of single use Ziploc bags. Like I shudder to think about how many dang Ziploc bags we all consumed and used at that age, like through K-12, like in the 90s, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
for everything. And so now if you're a parent and you, I know I'm going to be speaking to you when I say like getting your kids to keep track of things is rough. So I get that there is a, just like a natural pull that's like, look, like Laura, I would love to send my kids to school with like stasher bags or like reusable alternatives, but like they lose them, right? And so I get that. I get that there's like kind of a financial cost up front. There are like paper-based food containers for single-use things that you can use instead of like, you know, if you, for, like think about like a classic, you know, snack goldfish in a plastic bag. You can get small little paper packets to put those goldfish in. So just like thinking about it, because I don't want to be unrealistic for people. I totally know that kids can lose stuff. I mean, you can absolutely come up with a system though, where like you can like reward your kids for bringing stuff back and like, you know, keep up a point system and stuff.
Yeah,
I've heard of some families doing that just to kind of encourage them to
make it fun,
to keep track of stuff. And then like for the rest of us that are, you know, in charge of our own, you know, consumption patterns, like, you know, trying to cut down on single use, whether we're thinking about coffee cups or, I mean, straws are kind of a trope now, but just thinking through, right? I think it's just trying to be mindful.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of school, I mean, I think we should talk about, you know, how much teachers are so important to, you know, our impact. And I know, Laura, you probably have a special teacher that you've had growing up, but for me, absolutely. And I think teachers make such a huge difference. And there's also fun ways that teachers can include kind of sustainability teaching in their classroom as well.
Yeah. And I mean, so one of the things that I really feel like is a huge barrier for the average person fighting against climate change is just a lack of education. I mean, there's a lack of education in general with folks on a variety of topics. I think we could probably all agree there, but like there is, you know, there is a huge amount of change that can be created at the education level by just number one, like recognizing that climate change is a thing, which most, I just saw a statistic that said roughly 75 to 80% of teachers agree with that, which I'm surprised it's not 100%, but, you know, just making sure that climate change is baked into lesson plans and that we're talking a little bit about that. But the other interesting thing that I kind of looked up was like 1 in 4 teachers, principals, and district leaders in the United States say that climate change is actually already impacting their school or district to some extent. Wow. And so that is basically thinking about school closures because of wildfires or flooding or natural disasters. That is like a huge, huge problem across the world. And when you think about not only the impact to like the physical school buildings, there's also like a huge impact to kids because it's like, it's scary. Like there's a decline in the kind of physical and mental health when you affect the normal patterns of school. And so it's just a really interesting thing to think about. And so we have just got to make sure that our educators are being supported as much as possible. So because they are like really ground zero in the fight, trying to educate people about like why this is important. And of course, we also need to make sure that we're properly, you know, supporting and funding our school districts too, through tax dollars and through, you know, different initiatives and making sure that this is a huge priority for us, because I feel like, you know, in general, it seems to me like the education has just become like less and less of a priority in this country. I don't know. For me, it just doesn't seem like as important as it used to be. So like, we really want to make sure that we are getting back to ground zero and really helping uplift and support teachers in whatever way possible. And we'll talk a little bit about like a really fun thing we're going to do this month in a second, but just thinking about the impact that teachers have on our daily lives. Like I was thinking back through this, I don't know if I had a specific teacher that was responsible for you know, giving me a love of the environment or anything climate change specific, but I always just my whole life had been and continue to be a really avid reader. Now, granted, I don't have as much time to read anymore as I'd like to, but always really, really enjoyed books and just thinking through, you know, using fiction and nonfiction, obviously to an extent, to get kids to be creative and immerse themselves in different worlds and thinking about how, you know, the world as we know it, or the world as it exists in books that were written, you know, 50 years ago doesn't exist. I mean, it's a completely different world now. And so like using that creativity and really fostering that love of curiosity and, you know, just thought process in kids and getting them to like kind of think outside the box. I had a lot of amazing teachers that did that. I was part of a program called Reach that was like designed to get kids, you know, it was funny. It was like once a week they'd actually pull some of the kids out of class, and it was kind of this like experimental like kind of creative type thing that we did. And I remember there were all sorts of really fun things they had us do to think outside the box and like, inspire a generation of curious learners.
I think that's so critically important. I think we need to do more of that. And I just feel, I don't know about you, but I feel like students and teachers that just have it so much tougher nowadays, it seems like, even than when we were in school.
Well, they do, because everything's been politicized, unfortunately, and poor students and teachers are kind of caught in the middle. There's a lot of parents paying a lot of attention to curriculum, and sure, parents obviously do need to pay attention to curriculum to the extent they can. But I think there's a lot of unfortunate things going on that are distracting from like the real challenge of just inspiring learners. And it's happening on all sides. It's happening in all sorts of places in the country. And so it's not one area. There's just a lot of distraction going on there. But Leon, do you want to talk a little bit about like the exciting like initiative that we're going to do this month to help kind of uplift and appreciate our teachers?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for me, certain teachers played such an important role, I feel like, in me growing up. I had this one teacher, Laura. Her name's Noni Schwartz. So if you're listening, you did an amazing impact. You had an amazing impact on me. So she's my sixth grade geography teacher, and I used to love geography. And I think she really sparked my love, I think, of travel and kind of learning about other cultures, and really like what we were saying is kind of inspiring that wanting to be curious and learn about other types of people, and then having, so really learning like empathy for people who are, you know, different than you and live in a different environment. And I've always loved traveling and kind of seeing that. So I think she really helped spark that love for me, and also giving me like a really worldly like perspective and trying to put your shoes, you know, what's the quote I'm looking for, where you're
putting yourself in somebody else's shoes.
There you go. There you go. It's a, you know, it's been a week. But yeah, so I think Noni Schwartz, and I'll try not to get a little emotional here, but she made a really big impact in my life from a really young age. So I just, for us at Brightly, we appreciate teachers so much, and we actually are going to have a really exciting teacher appreciation giveaway that's going to take place in August. And the winner, so we're going to actually have a fun contest where people get to nominate their favorite teachers and write up kind of why they think they deserve to win. And the winning teacher will actually get $200 in cash and another $170 in eco-friendly products to be able to use for their classroom. And so I think that's going to make a really huge difference. And for us, it's just so important to be able to give back to the teachers that I think are so critical and do so much and do, you know, a lot of things that are really underappreciated. So for us, I'm really excited about this initiative, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I am too. And we, you know, I think we had heard different versions of, you know, people being able to buy out teachers, Amazon wish lists and things like that. And we just kind of wanted to take it a step further and say like, yeah, like we'll give you some cash to help do that wherever you'd like to. And then, we would love to just, you know, help with the way, with some of the products that we mentioned earlier, like we'd love to donate some. So anyway, like Leon said, that contest is going to run this month. We'll have it running, you know, through the middle of the month, and then we'll announce the winner at the end of August. And, you know, would love to hear, you know, why these teachers matter to you. And, you know, if there's a tie-in to the climate and everything, that would be awesome, but it's not required. It's just something that we really wanted to do to say thank you. So listeners, you know, Leon and I covered just a really few things, you know, talking about like the general back to school culture, but We know we didn't get to everything in the, in this episode. So we'd love to hear your feedback. As always, you can, you know, engage with us on social. We'd love to see like more podcast chatter there, because I know you listening here are also following us everywhere else. But like, I'm always excited to hear when somebody like reaches out to us and DMs us about the podcast specifically. So just let us know or send us a note on email that you can chat to us at podcast@brightly.eco if you want to say hi and give us some feedback. But as always, we really, you know, create this for you to help answer questions and be really helpful and, you know, just get you excited about living a more eco-friendly life. So thank you so much, Leon, for joining.
A lot of fun again. Happy to join and super excited about this.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. And as a special thank you to our listeners, use code GOODTOGETHER to get 10% off all products in Brightly's brand new shop full of planet-positive swaps for your home. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.